Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Your Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney. I'm hosting you and escorting you about the battle space of the War of Ideas, which is being waged here with gusto by several of the best in the business, starting with Dr. Tawfiq Hamid, a former Muslim terrorist and current practicing Muslim, who supports Pete King's hearings taking place in the course of the day today. We'll be talking with Tawfiq about why, as a Muslim, he believes these hearings are both needed and very important, and will, I think, surprise you by some of his insights. Christian Whiton will be joining us once again. Christian is one of our go-to guys on foreign policy. There's a lot of it being made at the moment, or not, as the case may be, with respect to Libya, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia, which is undergoing a day of rage tomorrow. What will come of all of that? We'll be visiting with one of the smartest guys in the business, Christian Whiton, in segment three. Segment four, Sarah Carter will be joining us, our go-to gal on the Pentagon. She is going to report from her perch at the Washington Examiner about a very moving event she went to honoring an assassinated Christian minister, that is to say, cabinet minister, in Pakistan. What does it portend for that country, for neighboring Afghanistan, and for us? And also, Sarah Carter will throw her hat in the ring on some sweepstakes about the Pentagon leadership, some big changes that are coming, and again, what that will mean for all of us. But first, I wanted to share with you some experiences of my own in the battle space of the War of Ideas. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to debate with a representative of the Council on American Islamic Relations, an organization that I'm going to talk to Tawfiq about a little bit as well shortly. Her name was Christina Abraham, and she's out of, I believe, the CARE Chicago chapter. We were together on Eric Bolling's program on the Fox Business Channel, and we were there to talk a bit about these hearings by Congressman Pete King, and specifically the position taken by one of the witnesses in those hearings, Dr. Zudi Jasser, a man you all know I greatly admire, a man who I believe exemplifies, not just speaks for, but exemplifies the best in the Muslim American community at this time. Dr. Jasser was actually on the Bolling program prior to our little debate, Christina's and mine, and the question that was initially put to her when Eric Bolling finished interviewing Zudi Jasser and got from him strong support of the kind you'll hear shortly from Tawfiq for Pete King's hearings, for his effort to get to the bottom of what is happening inside the Muslim American community, and why we are not finding more help from that community in contending with what he calls, Congressman King, extremism inside it. Well, Christina's response was very critical of not only Pete King and his efforts, but of Zudi Jasser. And she essentially decried him as a man who was just completely out of touch with Muslim Americans, and that only through organizations like hers, CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and other Muslim leadership groups, she maintained, could one properly understand the sentiments of that community and reach out to them. And since they want no part of Pete King's hearings, that's obviously not on, at least at the moment. But the point is this, that I argued, and I think properly so, that Zudi Jasser's views, Zudi Jasser's aspirations, Zudi Jasser's articulate representation is much closer to what Muslim Americans have historically sought, believed, wanted in this country, namely to live the American dream, to be part of the American dream. Yes, to practice their faith in a peaceable, tolerant, law-abiding way, but to be very much subject to our Constitution, to benefit from the system of laws and the guarantees of civil liberties that it provides, and otherwise to, as I say, live the American dream. Well, Christina seemed to have very little interest in all of that. She was very big on CARE's role as a defender of Muslims' rights, in very much the spirit that is symptomatic of CARE's approach, and that of, frankly, organizations like it, namely that Muslims are being victimized, Muslims are aggrieved, Muslims need to have special consideration and to be able essentially to live apart, live under Sharia, this political, military, legal program that, in fact, those who adhere to it not only want to be subjected to themselves, but want to ensure that everyone worldwide is subjected to. And that is, in fact, of course, the agenda of the Muslim Brotherhood. And I pointed out in the course of this program that that Muslim Brotherhood that we're hearing so much about now in Egypt and in other parts of the Middle East, and we'll get into a bit of this with Christian shortly, but that Muslim Brotherhood has front organizations all over America, one of the most prominent of which is the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Now, Ms. Abraham didn't want to hear any of that, in fact was very aggressive in denying that and calling into question my authority in making this point. And I simply said, look, it's a matter of record. You've had four federal judges finding that the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, is indeed a Muslim Brotherhood front. It has been closely associated with, for its entire existence, Hamas, a designated terrorist organization that is the Palestinian franchise of the Muslim Brotherhood. And, of course, this created a howls of objections from old Christina. And she, at one point, actually threatened me with a defamation lawsuit. But I said then, and I will say now, and I will say in a court of law should it come to that, the Council on American-Islamic Relations began with the Islamic Association of Palestine, which the Muslim Brotherhood, in an explanatory memorandum, introduced into evidence in the Holy Land Foundation trial, the largest terrorism financing conspiracy trial in American history, that this organization begat the Council on American-Islamic Relations in 1994. We know that two of the top leaders of the Islamic Association of Palestine, Niyad Awad and Omar Ahmad, became the leaders of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. And how do we know that? Because the FBI had the organizational meeting where they created the Council on American-Islamic Relations under surveillance. All of this was introduced into evidence in the Holy Land Foundation trial. Judge Solis, the federal district judge who presided over that trial, found that the evidence was compelling, that CARE was indeed tied to the Muslim Brotherhood, and we had, in addition, three federal judges at the appeals court level hear an appeal to the effect that CARE should not be listed as a Muslim Brotherhood front, as an unindicted co-conspirator. They affirmed the judge's ruling, only ordering him to unseal it, which he has done, and it is on that basis that we know exactly what he said. So here's the bottom line. When you hear Kerr railing against Pete King, know that it is the Muslim Brotherhood talking, and we should pay no attention to them. In fact, we should be in the business of rolling them up. And that's what I hope will come out of these hearings. And if so, they will mark an historic change, one long overdue and one urgently needed in our effort to keep America Sharia-free. Next up, we'll be talking to a man who knows exactly why that's necessary, Tawfiq Hameed. Straight ahead. That is...
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY. 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer. The powerful, all-natural way to lose weight. 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
China is a leader in the green movement? Yeah, Glenn Beck is as surprised as you.
Man has to do the things to take care of the environment. Americans are some of the best in the world on the environment. Really, China?
You're really looking at China to lead the world.
You know what our skies and our oceans will look like when China takes the lead? Which, by the way, check your watches, I think happened about last week.
Glenn Beck, weekday mornings 9 to noon on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined by Dr. Tawfiq Hameed, a man with a remarkable story. He is currently a senior fellow and chair of for the study of Islamic radicalism at the Potomac Institute for Policy Studies. But prior to that, he was at one point a terrorist in training in his native Egypt. And we're grateful beyond words that he saw the folly of that course of action and decided to become part of the solution to the threat posed by the program of Sharia that he adhered to and that he was using violence at a moment or was poised to use violence to promote. Tawfiq Hameed, thank you so much for joining us, especially on a moment when the world's eyes are riveted on what's going on in Pete King's Homeland Security Committee. Hearings are underway as we speak, and we're very appreciative of having the chance to talk with you about what you make of those hearings, the importance of them, and the subject that hopefully will be fully explored in their course.
My pleasure and honor to be with you again, Frank. My position here is that Congressman Peter King is doing what I see as necessary to counter the radicalization process that's currently happening among several Muslim communities. The reality, Frank, is that the Muslim communities represent only 1% of the society, yet almost all homegrown Islamic terror attacks and the threats are coming from them, including people who convert to Islam. So what I see Congressman Peter King is doing is the most rational and honest approach to deal with the problem. He cannot ignore it, and we cannot ignore it until we see a major disaster happening in our country. This is number one. Number two, the Muslim community need to realize that they failed to solve the problem, and that in the last few years, in fact, the last couple of years represents the highest level of the threat of homegrown radicalism. So we truly deal with the problem, as I always mention. If the people who take certain medication get certain disease or a problem, we need to investigate this medication. We don't need to investigate other medications. So when we see people following this ideology, specific ideology, and becoming jihadists and developing homegrown terrorist ideas, we should investigate this ideology, not go to other ideologies. We haven't seen the problem coming from Hindus or Buddhists or Baha'i, Frank. We have seen it specifically coming from the Muslim community. So that's why I fully support Congressman Peter King in investigating this phenomenon.
Well, Tawfiq, you did so in a very powerfully argued piece that appeared in Newsmax yesterday. And I just wanted to quote a paragraph, which I really thought was so important, particularly coming from a Muslim who is part of the, as I say, the community that we are finally, under Pete King's leadership, taking a look at. And one of the people, of course, testifying in the hearings today was Representative Keith Ellison, a Muslim member of Congress from Minnesota. And you mentioned in this passage that, quote, Congressman Ellison welcomes confronting the ideology of al-Awlaki, the American-born cleric who is hiding in Yemen now and, as you know, running al-Qaeda operations against us from there. And you go on to say, I quote, I fully agree with him on this. However, he, that is Congressman Ellison, needs to realize that the violent teachings that can end in creating terrorists is not limited to al-Awlaki or bin Laden teaching, but is an integral and unchallenged part of the current mainstream teachings that are available to many young Muslims in the United States and overseas. And Tawfiq Hamid, I just wonder, when you talk about that widespread availability of these teachings as being actually mainstream, you are presumably talking about the kind of Sharia program that is promoted in mosques and through bookstores and the internet and videos and so on, around this country, certainly, and around the world. Is that, in fact, what you're referring to?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's available, Frank, in everywhere Muslims can get Islamic education in general. Like, for example, you can find this teaching in the Islamic bookstores. You can just go and grab any Islamic jurisprudence book or Sharia book, and you will see clearly that these books, while do not teach suicide bombing, but they teach the hatred, they teach the violent attitude toward the other, and that is the main core of the problem. They teach they undervalue the life of non-Muslims. So if a Muslim killed a Muslim, he is punishable by death. But if a Muslim, according to the Sharia laws, killed a non-Muslim, he shouldn't be punishable by death. So when you read this, when you study this coming from the mainstream Islamic books, and this is unchallenged, available on these books in Amazon, you can bookstore, you can find them Amazon online, you can buy them in the Islamic bookstores here, you can get the information via the internet, and the problem here is that these values, these violent and barbaric values, are not challenged by other books. So as young Muslims, you don't have too many options. You have one option, and that is it.
Yes,
so
this is really the crux of the matter. Yeah, if I may, Tawfiq Hamid, we're so grateful for that insight about what is, in fact, being promoted in the mainstream of Islamist teaching and so on, and it just helps calibrate, and I think, as you say, reinforces the argument for Pete King to be doing the work he's doing. Let me switch gears slightly, because hailing from Egypt as you do, and given your past, as you've called it in your latest book, Inside Jihad, the subtitle of which is Understanding and Confronting Radical Islam, Tafiq Hamid, you know a lot about the Muslim Brotherhood. And I'm interested in both your thoughts about what its agenda is globally and what you can tell us about how it is operating inside the United States itself through a variety of front organizations that are promoting precisely this teaching that you've warned us about.
The ultimate aim of this group is to Islamize the world under one caliphate and to make it following an Islamic Sharia law. This is the ultimate goal. They simply use different tactics from other groups. Other groups are more confrontational, more violent, but this group do not directly go to use violence, but they use a political system and change the society gradually via money, via creating Sharia banking to make them part of an Islamic system, via promoting the hijab phenomena, via promoting the Islamic teaching and trying to present it as if it's a secular form of, or present itself as secular organization just on the surface. But the reality is that they promote many principles that completely contradict our constitution. And this is the way they go. They use like subtle way of infiltrating the society, changing people to make them Muslim, convert them to Islam, and they go gradually to control the banks, to make women wear the hijab, to control the society in different aspects until they achieve their target.
Yes, this is the stealth jihad, or as the guest of the Brotherhood calls it, civilization jihad. And just a quick word, because Pete King, Congressman Pete King, has come in for so much criticism from groups like the Council on American Islamic Relations, for example, of which I spoke earlier in the program. Is there any question in your mind that they constitute a part of the Muslim Brotherhood apparatus and agenda in America?
Absolutely not. They are an integral part of the whole system that's trying to overthrow our value system of human rights and constitution and replace it by an Islamic Sharia agenda. That's these are just different faces of the same coin.
Yeah. And to the extent that they are successfully insinuating themselves into our civil society and into our government, they are unfortunately making significant progress, I'm sure you would agree, in advancing the purposes of this stealth jihad. Tafiq Hamid, thank you so much for joining us. If you would like to learn more about Tafiq Hamid, I encourage you to go to TafiqHamid.com. That's TafiqHamid.com. And thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Hamid, and I hope you will do so perhaps immediately in the aftermath of the King hearings to tell us what you thought came out of them and where we need to go from here. Next up, we will be talking with Christian Whiton about the Brotherhood's operations in the Middle East and what it'll mean for you.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you.
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope and life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Following is an important message from President Clinton and President Bush.
In January, Haiti experienced an environmental catastrophe and human tragedy of epic proportion.
But thanks in part to the generous spirit of the American people, the country of Haiti has survived. But now the people need to thrive. President Clinton and I have seen firsthand the power of your contributions at work.
The Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund is on the ground, funding programs that create jobs, teach skills, and assist local businesses.
Our fund is dedicated to supporting initiatives that encourage local entrepreneurs and help build an inclusive economy that lifts up everyone.
Help us continue this work so the people of Haiti have an opportunity to prosper.
Thank you.
To donate, go to ClintonBushHaitiFund.org or text QUAKE to 20222 to give $10. Message and data rates may apply. Brought to you by the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Effney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Christian Whiten. He has been, of late, much in the news, as he is commenting with great perspicacity on developments near and far, notably with Fox News, including FoxNews.com. You can read his periodic essays there, as well as see him on the big screen, or the not-so-big, the little screen, I guess it is, relatively big. But Christian, it's always great to have you with us on our screenless service here at Secure Freedom Radio, and once again, welcome.
Thanks, Frank. Great to be here.
Let's start with, we're probably going to wind up consuming all of our time just trying to make sense of what you think is happening in the Middle East at the moment. You bring to this subject considerable experience in the State Department, where you served from 2003 to 2009, including as an advisor to the Undersecretary of State for Global Affairs and as a Deputy Special Envoy. So you've got a diplomat's perspective, but also, I think, a very clear-eyed strategic thinker's perspective on things. And I'd like to get your read on Libya, for starters. Much talk about a no-fly zone being necessary. Is it advisable? If not, what should we be doing there?
All right. Well, Frank, I think it's important that we not just let what's going on in Libya just go to result from chance or outsource it to the UN, if you will. We need to shape events there. But I would put Libya in sort of that middle zone. It's not something that's unimportant to U.S. security, but it's not a hugely compelling and immediately urgent need that would compel the use of force, I'd say. So it's something we want to shape, but I would argue that if we use military force, it'd be fairly directed and fairly guided. A no-fly zone, I mean, some of the complaints about that General Mattis, the head of Central Command, and General Gates mentioned, the complexities of that, the amount of force that would be required for that in a world where, you know, our Navy is about half the size it was when Ronald Reagan left office. So there's some challenges of that. So I think, a smarter move would be something like providing the freedom fighters, the rebels, with intelligence, with humanitarian assistance, and possibly with military assistance. The problem is, of course, you'd need an order from the president to do that, and no order seems to be forthcoming anywhere on the horizon. The administration has used its mantra on this crisis, as in all crises, that everything's on the table, but clearly a number of things aren't on the table if you decipher the speakings of Press Secretary Jay Carney, who I would say neatly personifies this administration's weakness overall.
Mm. This is, I guess, a question that may be unknowable in terms of certitude in the answer, but let me try it out on you anyway. Kristen Whiten, who are the rebels? Who are the folks who we might be arming, and what do we think might be done with the arms afterwards, should they succeed, if it turns out that they are Islamists of the Muslim Brotherhood stripe or otherwise?
Right. Very good question. And you sort of look at this and think back to the Afghan resistance against the Soviet Army, against the Red Army, and think, well, gee, if aviation is really the threat they face, then MANPADS, man-portable air defense system, would be the thing to provide them with. Well, those are also the tools that we were busy in the last decade tracking down and really trying quite hard to make sure they hadn't found their way into the arms of terrorists, because they could be used to shoot down commercial airliners. So hard to know exactly what to provide, but this is actually an opportunity. You know, we have an $80 billion a year intelligence community. They should be able to go out and contact and liaise with and assess these different groups, the different factions, different elements among the rebels, to really run to ground who the good guys are and who the opportunists are here, who would just like to perhaps take Gaddafi's place or have very little interest in democracy and accountable government. And then, of course, we could provide the assistance to the better parties. That's what I think would happen in a better world, where we would try and shape this by what we know and who we help. But I, of course, have fairly little confidence in our intelligence community as currently managed, and significantly less in our Foreign Service and State Department to do that. So
let alone in how good the world is. The better world is not the one we're operating in, I'm afraid. So for all those reasons, it seems really quite problematic to arm these guys. But I take the point that you'd like to shape events, that's for sure. Let's set that one aside for a moment, because it may be really challenging for us to do much shaping of a positive kind anyway. But how about neighboring Egypt, Christian Whiten? What is happening there of late suggests that the revolution isn't exactly over. What is your prognosis as to whether the military is going to hold on to power, is going to crack down on these demonstrators, that the Muslim Brotherhood is not, in fact, going to get the electoral victory that I think it's angling for in the near future? I mean, where do we go with Egypt at this point, do you think?
I'm still relatively positive on Egypt, but I think it, again, is something we should shape. We have a whole lot more leverage in Egypt than in Libya or in Tunisia or in a number of these other places. So you have efforts to displace what have been called mini Mubaraks, people who rose to the top of their institutions in Libya because of their deference to or favorability toward Mubarak. So you'll have growing pains like that going on. You know, the army, which was generally commendable during the uprisings and generally refrained from any violence against the protesters, and continues to play a positive role. And it's one that we want to, you know, continue to encourage. The army does things that, you know, a professional army would not do. It still is heavily involved in business. And that'll be problematic if you want Egypt to have any sort of economic renaissance like you had in Eastern Europe after the wall came down. that therefore sort of augments the democratic evolution going on. So things we should be shaping, we should, of course, in my opinion, be telling them that absolutely not should they allow Islamists into their political system, just as we do not allow people into ours who don't take an oath of loyalty to our Constitution. They should not either, but I'm afraid the State Department, Obama administration, will give precisely the opposite advice, that they will say, let's be inclusive. In fact, Secretary Clinton almost never gives a speech without mentioning that word anymore.
Yeah, no, that's very big on her her sort of agenda. The question, I guess, that occurs is to the extent that the Muslim Brotherhood takes an oath to the Constitution, but the Constitution, in fact, reflects the idea that Sharia will be the governing principle and umbrella into which all other laws are made, may wind up having an inclusive arrangement that does ultimately produce exactly the unfavorable result of a critically important nation like Egypt being taken over by these guys. Let's segue one more time, if we could, quickly. We've only got about 2 minutes left. Christian Whiten, who is currently a principal at DC International Advisory. You can find him at Whiten.com, Whiton.com. Talk to me about, if you would, the Day of Rage that is now expected to take place on Friday of this week in Saudi Arabia. What do you think is going to come out of that?
Well, it'd be very interesting to watch. The Saudis ought to be worried. A number of the other Gulf states, all of which, of course, are much smaller than Saudi, have undertaken differing amounts of political reform, at least trying to address the desire among their populations for some sort of accountable government. Saudi has been a laggard at that, and Saudi is a very repressive state. So I think they do have a lot to worry about. And also, I'm not an apologist for any monarchical system, but other wealthy Gulf states have, I think, done a better job of availing more of their public of the benefits of oil wealth, whereas Saudi has tended to run it just to the benefit of the royal family. So if you look at what's happening in Bahrain, where the Shia population has become, very disgruntled and certainly wants change, I think that's something you could see there. Of course, that has ramifications for the price of oil and other political factors. So, I actually think that Saudi Arabia should be subject to these forces and should change. And I'm somewhat optimistic, if you will, that frankly they're going to get a very strong signal from their own population that they need to do something.
Yeah. Well, again, and we're going to have to leave it with this, Christian, an open-ended question to which I hope you will come back and address with us. To what end will change take place in Saudi Arabia? Will it once again be the case that the change, the reform, the opening winds up being filled by some very hostile people to the United States? And that's going to say something, because the Saudis haven't been altogether friendly in their own right under the present regime. Christian Whiten, as always, thank you for your insights, your thoughtfulness, and we'll look forward to talking with you again as this story continues, needless to say, to develop. Finally, Sarah Korda is up next.
Thank you, Frank.
And she'll be talking with us about the change in Pentagon leadership. Boy, what is in store for us all? Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY, 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager is skeptical that the changes in the Middle East will be good for the region.
There is little historic precedent for being optimistic about political developments in the Arab world.
That doesn't mean it will never be good.
It just means that based on history, there is not a lot of reason to be optimistic about anything that happens in the Arab world.
The Dennis Prager Show, weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say
sweater?
That?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined by Sarah Carter, one of our superb correspondents covering the Pentagon beat and national security more generally for the Washington Examiner, and I'm very pleased to say for us here at Secure Freedom Radio. Sarah, welcome back. I know we're catching you in a torrential rainstorm on your cell phone in your car, and gives it a little texture for our audience as to your reporting in motion. You tell us a little bit about, before we get on to the sweepstakes of changes in the Pentagon leadership, Sarah, what you did yesterday. Gives us an insight into one of the theaters that I know you've been following very closely, the Afghan-Pakistan situation.
Correct. Yes. Yesterday, I attended the Embassy of Pakistan here in Washington, D.C., memorial service for Bhatti, who was the minister for minorities in Pakistan, who was gunned down last week. It was terrible. His body was riddled with over 25 bullets. It was an assassination. The Punjab Taliban in Pakistan claimed responsibility for it. The ceremony was very interesting. It was was attended by the Undersecretary of State and a number of high-level officials from Pakistan, and was actually, the memorial was hosted by a Christian minister, Catholic priest as well from Pakistan, came and did service.
This was, Bhatti was, of course, Sarah Carter, a Christian
yes.
whose portfolio was to try to represent minorities in a part of the world that is very hostile to them and increasingly so. And, of course, his murder, you might explain why he was murdered or at least what the pretext was for this assassination.
Yeah, absolutely. He spoke out vehemently against the blasphemy laws in Pakistan, and he also spoke for the minorities, mainly the Christian minorities, as well as others, Hindus in Pakistan. It's mainly a Muslim majority country, and his speaking out against these blasphemy laws drew the ire of all of the Taliban and Al Qaeda cells operating in the nation. And as you know, right now, Pakistan is on the verge of some very, very strong possible changes, and we've seen Pakistan, particularly the people of Pakistan, leaning more and more towards the extremist ideology, and that's really a frightening moment for a lot of people and for the government of Pakistan, which is mired with its own mess, corruption charges, and others who really would like to see a democratic fledgling government succeed. So Bhatti's death was resounded across the world as like, wait a minute, we need to pay attention to what's going on in this region, and we need to really look at what's happening in Pakistan. And so what was very interesting to me, you know, the ambassador stood up, and he made some statements that I had not seen him make in the past in Pakistani officials, and he really pointed out the Pakistani people, and he said, the Pakistani people, the Muslim people, can no longer be silent, or they will lose their nation. And this means standing idly by and watching innocent people being gunned down in the streets of Pakistan and bombs going off in marketplaces. And he said, if the Pakistani Muslim population stays silent, they will lose their nation. And I thought it was a very strong statement coming from an official from the country. And others stood by and said the same. His wife, Farah, was there. She is a parliamentary member. She made the same statements. She was very close to Bhatti. She worked very close with Benazir Bhutto, who was also assassinated. And she knew Tazir, who was another member, the governor of Punjab, who was assassinated several months ago. So I think this is the first time we are seeing, you know, Pakistani officials really taking to heart that the problem within their nation is their problem, and that they need to start condemning these extremist groups and those working within their government that are extremists, and putting them on the line and saying, wait a minute, you're responsible for this. You're going to be responsible for the downfall of this country. And if we don't speak out, we have only ourselves to blame.
Yeah. Sarah Carter from the Washington Examiner.
And I think that was most interesting.
Yeah. Sarah Carter of the Washington Examiner is with us and reporting on a very moving memorial service. And of course, the ambassador, I assume, is Muslim. And it does indeed take courage. Perhaps being a little further away from Pakistan might make it a little less risky for him. But I'm sure that he's putting his life on the line too, and of course what this whole Sharia blasphemy business is about is forcing people to be silent, forcing people to be submissive to this this very brutal totalitarian repressive program. So Sarah, I do want to move on, but thank you very much for this really important report, as it is a further, as you say, wake-up call about what is likely to be a very, very important factor in the future of Afghanistan, not just Pakistan, namely this this rising Sharia adherence activism and bloodletting. But Sarah, let me quickly turn. I was
Absolutely.
Listening to NPR this morning on a report by one of your colleagues in the Pentagon, Tom Bowman, their correspondent there, and Tom was calling to mind the fact that the Pentagon leadership is about to undergo some very momentous changes. Speaking of momentous changes, namely the imminent departure of the Secretary of Defense, Bob Gates, the departure we're expecting in reasonably short order as well of the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mike Mullen, And the transfer at some point of command in the near future to a new chief combatant commander, I guess you'd say, in Afghanistan, the post currently held by General David Petraeus. Tom Bowman made some predictions as to who's going to get the replacements, who will be the replacements for these various positions. And maybe I could give you his bookmaking and ask for your comments on them and any further intelligence that you might share with us about who's likely to take these key slots. For Bob Gates, Tom Bowman at NPR suggested it was likely to be Leon Panetta, the current CIA director, or John Hamray, a former deputy secretary of defense during the Clinton administration. For Mike Mullen's job, he thought that General Petraeus would not get that position when he leaves his post in Afghanistan, that he's too close to George W. Bush or perceived to have been too close to him, and that the current vice chairman will simply move up, General Cartwright. And for Petraeus, the prediction was that a lieutenant general I've not heard of before, but I'm sure you know, General John Allen, a Marine who distinguished himself particularly apparently in Iraq. Tell us, in the remaining couple of minutes we have, what's your sense of those predictions or others that you've been hearing about, and what would the implications be?
Well, General John Allen, I think, is definitely right on the mark. I think that, you know, he's proven himself to be a great commander, a great leader, and I think that Tom Bowman, my colleague who I've been with in Afghanistan several times, is right on the money there. I did hear, and this is something different, that Secretary of Defense Robert Gates may be replaced by Chuck Hagel. That's something different than what Tom Bowman is predicting. But
former senator from
Senator
from Nebraska, I believe, right?
The former senator. And I've heard that from several officials, and as recently as just a month ago. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
And this is, by the way, a former Republican senator, so sort of in keeping with the Gates model for this president.
Keeping in tradition, yes.
There we go.
Yeah, keeping tradition with the Gates model.
And how about quickly, Mike Mullins, chairman?
Yes, Cartwright. I think right on the money there. I think he'll just move right on up. And so I think Tom Bowman, you know, I have a lot of faith in him and what he says. And it's the same as I've been hearing. It'll just be interesting to see if who's right about Gates.
Yeah, two out of three correlation.
That's all up in the air.
Two out of three correlation in that. Sarah Carter, thank you so much for joining us, and we appreciate you doing so under less than optimal circumstances. Please drive safely and keep your eye on the road, as they say, and keep your eye on what's happening in the Pentagon, and we'll look forward very much to talking with you again about all of this next week, as we do each week. Sarah Carter of the Washington Examiner.
That's right, Frank. Thank you.
That's it for this installment of Secure Freedom Radio. I hope you found it informative and important to your security and freedom, and that of those you love. That's why we're here, and we like to think that's why you're coming back. Do so again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks so much for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.